This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
I think when you're advising players, particularly with bridge-type contracts where you're certainly looking to a long-term contract, and certainly for Alex, his goals were winning. And frankly, he had a 1,200 OPS in Fenway, and he certainly hits well on the road too, but that certainly was one of the ballparks where he sees it well and plays well. So for that type of contract, it was certainly a major consideration in his choices of going to a franchise that had, you know, some franchise talent on it, veteran players, and also a good young crop of players. So, but his performance level there was certainly an important part of his consideration.
Scott Boras. Okay, it's that's a name we hear all the time. He's had some big, high-profile wins. He's had some losses. His role in baseball, he's gone from sort of the boogeyman who represents all these greedy, selfish players to some people better understanding. No, he's an agent who has clients, and he represents them in their best interests. And it's sort of been the subject, because he represents so many high-profile players, the Cubs are often in his orbit and vice versa.
I'm looking at this, and I understand that Scott Boras has a job to do, and he does a very good job at it. And people would kind of doubt him every once in a while because they're like, well, you know, the things have changed, you know. And I realize now that it's going to take an extraordinary effort to get the guys that you want, because guess what? If you have, it's like when you were younger. Well, I think when all of us were younger, and you were interested in someone, right? This idea that you were interested in them in a vacuum is so ridiculous. Because do you have bad taste? And if you have bad taste, fine. Yes, you're going to get what you want, and it's not going to really take much effort, right? But if you have good taste, I profess to have good taste, it's going to take a certain amount of effort to get what you want. The Cubs keep operating as if they're in a vacuum. Tom Ricketts says, yes, you can pay him this money that we weren't going to allow you to pay him, and that'll be good enough because, well, we're going above and beyond what we wanted to do in a vacuum. There are other people who want these players.
It might not be the market rate.
It's not the market rate. You know how I know? Because he signed a deal that was much more valuable, that had more opt-outs, and the deferred money helps. And these are all things that you were not willing to do. You know the expression that a lot of young ladies tell me when they are struggling with deciding whether or not to continue going forward with a man is, well, if he wanted to, he would. And it's true. And if the Cubs wanted to, they would. They didn't. So they didn't want to.
That's sort of what we were saying regarding the 1 year all in with Vlad Guerrero. They're not going to pay him thereafter. Just like they're not going to pay
might,
Kyle
they
Tucker.
Might, because think, because you can, you all, it's never too late to evolve. No. Dan, you sat here in this very studio before the season began, the NFL season began, and you told me one thing for certain. Well, they're definitely not going to get rid of Matt Eberflus before the season's in because they just don't do that.
I wanted them to.
Did they evolve?
They wanted to, and they did.
Exactly. It's that simple. And anybody who's in an ownership level of a team that's top five in revenue, like the Cubs, and wants to convince you otherwise, is blowing smoke.
Here's what Ken Rosenthal said on the Fair Territory podcast regarding the Cubs' efforts or lack thereof to sign Alex Bregman.
Today, I want to build on a note that I had in my Sunday Notes column, the one about the Cubs and how they whiffed on Alex Bregman. And I started the note by saying, or recalling, what Theo Epstein said when the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman during the 2016 season. Theo, who was trying to break a 108-year World Series title drought, said, if not now, when? Now, as I mentioned, the situation for the Cubs now is not as urgent as it was then, but Alex Bregman for them presented an opportunity, a pretty rare opportunity, at a moment in time when they should have been ready to strike. Now, why is Bregman or why was Bregman such a rare opportunity? Couple of reasons. This is perhaps the only year the Cubs will have Kyle Tucker. At this point, you probably can say it is going to be the only year the Cubs are going to have Kyle Tucker because of the way that they've resisted spending long term for the most part in recent years. So you've got 1 year of Kyle Tucker, at least one certain year of club control. You've had years in which you were financially disciplined, cutting the payroll, trying to put yourself in a position where when an opportunity like Bregman arose, you'd be ready to go. Well, what did the Cubs do? They made the fourth highest offer behind the Tigers, behind the Astros, behind the Red Sox. I'm talking about total guaranteed money. And obviously, they didn't get the player. So I was critical of them in this particular note, and I said, if not now, when? That's the question Theo asked. And Tom Ricketts, as owner, his answer lately seems to be never. And when you're charging the highest ticket prices in the game, or among the highest ticket prices, I should say, that's a problem. And that's a lack of commitment that, frankly, deserves to be called out.
When you hear that and you pair it with what he said in The Athletic.
Agreed.
That's pretty strong.
Strong in that the Cubs are being weak when how they're coming at players.
Now, prior to the reports about Justin Turner, Rosenthal said the Cubs' current estimated luxury tax payroll ranks 14th. That was according to Baseball Prospectus. But his point is, Theo Epstein told you, if not now, then when? And you've defined your window. It's 1 year. It's Justin Turner's... Kyle Tucker's availability.
It's funny. He said, if not now, then when? And the new regime says, we did it already. Look what we did.
But you've defined your window. It's 1 year. It's Tucker.
I would argue it's 2
Period
years.
Period, paragraph.
I understand why you're saying it's 1 year because Kyle Tucker is only under contract for 1 year. But I would argue it's 2 years just because I think the work stoppage looms large in how they're looking at this period
Hell
of time.
Yeah, it does.
So I think it's a 2 year window. Now, with Kyle Tucker, you could start doing some calculations on who else will be available and not get, you know, extended, re-signed, whatever. And maybe there's another situation. Don't know that it'll be on Kyle Tucker's level, however, next year. That's why I'm adamant about the Vlad Guerrero Jr. piece. If you have a chance to add to this group this year, you do it because you've got Kyle Tucker. I mean, Ken Rosenthal was very cut and dry about it. I think Jed Hoyer is very cut and dry about it. But unfortunately, you know, one thing that Ken pointed out is there isn't as much urgency as there was for, you know, Theo back then. There's urgency for Jed Hoyer. I guarantee you that.
But it's not urgency that perhaps he has the financial wherewithal to act on.
I don't know wherewithal. It sounds like it's allowance.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it's like your parents give you an allowance and you're like,
hey, you better make the playoffs. Well, okay, let me go get players. No.
You know what it's equivalent to? It's equivalent to your parents telling you, well, you know what? I'm tired of driving you around. You need to buy a car. It's like, okay, you're going to help with that? yeah, I'll give you this much money, knowing it's not enough money to get a car. You can get a bike, be biking around town, maybe.
Yeah, or we'll give you this much money to go to college, and you know that's going to cost you like a half a semester. The quote that I think is telling is the one that Rosenthal illustrated in this part of the story, and it's from Hoyer saying, "I realize this is a financial stretch above our budget," referring to the Bregman offer, "but I realize that this is the moment to do it." So he knew, he's acknowledging what the restrictions are, but he's still going to try to the best of the ability. I'm not making excuses for anybody here. I'm just pointing out what seems to be the obvious path.
I think it's important that we hear Ricketts in his own words also talking about how they spend.
Baseball, the business model in baseball, it's worked pretty well for a long time, but there's a few things right now that just are a little out of kilter. Obviously, the Dodgers have a lot more resources naturally from smart business moves they made years ago, and so I don't begrudge them any of that. You know, some teams just have outside resources that are funding their player moves and acquisitions, and that's really hard to compete with. And I understand when fans say, "How come you don't spend like that?" Because they think somehow we have all these dollars that the Dodgers have, or the Mets have, or the Yankees have, then we just keep it, which isn't true at all. Like, what happens is we try to break even every year, and that's about it. And so, I think that there's one problem, that I think there's a competitive balance issue that gets created. But the other problem is, I don't think fans should spend all their time thinking about which team has more money or how much they're spending. We should talk about players and who we draft and who we're developing, and I just think it becomes a big narrative that's a distraction. So I think the model could get better. And then secondly, I think the other part of this is, and a little bit frustrating at times, is, you know, we've invested more in the team and the ballpark and the neighborhood than any other owner out of their pocket in baseball. Like, we came out privately financing all the renovations at Wrigley, everything we do around Wrigley Field, you know, roughly $1 billion. And no one has that kind of financial commitment to their team. And so so when I have a fan come up and say, "Hey, you're cheap," or you're open your wallet or something like that, I just think they're just misinformed. And it's just the wrong way to look at our ownership.
No.
The way he set that up, it's as if he doesn't think we are capable of understanding how, one, real estate works.
Yeah, one, we're allowed to focus on, as fans, whatever we want. Don't tell us what to focus on. We're not focusing on drafting and player development.
Distraction.
Investing in the city is an investment that will give back to you tenfold. It already has.
Nobody's bought up all the land.
Nobody's criticizing your investment in the city and the neighborhood in Wrigley.
All it's doing is accruing value.
Right. All they're doing is making money hand over fist on those investments.
I support it. We go to Rally House all the time. You know how we feel about that place. Like, I went to the DraftKings Sportsbook. Like,
they own all of it. And when you say we're only breaking even, that is a very, very, very specific silo of baseball-only money.
So that's what's hilarious about it, is he wants the investment piece of it to talk about all the other things, including baseball, but he wants the results to just be focused on the baseball in terms of, well, we do put in the money for the baseball and the other, but you're making money doing all this other stuff. You got to include that in the umbrella you're talking about as well.
That's not a distraction. That's where fans know, hey, you're making money hand over fist on all of this land and all of the increase in value, not to mention the cash that's being thrown off by concerts and rooftops and Gallagher Way. But that's not baseball money. That's not part of what you're putting back in.
Part of the issue here is, number one, they used to be that team. Like, the reason fans have this expectation is because of what they did to win a World Series. They did spend the money on the biggest name free agent available at the time, and it won the World Series. Period. That's the result of what happened after they signed Jason Hayward. You can talk all day until the cows come home about what happened after that. It was unfortunate. There were bad decisions that were made via trades and free agents because of it. Expensive ones. Trying to keep that thing afloat. We know what happened. The game changed. The batters changed. The profile of the batters changed. We know all of this. They did also draft well at that time. Well enough to see their first overall picks, their first round picks, come to fruition on the big league level. Wilson Contreras, I'll never forget when they announced that he was going to be there. But there were decisions that were made down the line that showed that they had a steep difference in how they were going to change the format of how they were operating on this team. Yu Darvish trade, will mention it every day. Letting Kyle Schwarber walk. They changed the standard. They did. So that's why fans ask the question, is because you set the standard for them and you gave them the result that they wanted.
And now they want that same result.
So that's why people ask the question. I appreciate him being present and giving his side of the story, because a lot of owners don't even do that. And I appreciate him investing in the city, because a lot of people don't do that.
But the key word is investing. He's making money on that.
But yeah, but let's separate why that disconnect is there. It's there because you gave people a World Series.
So you're saying he set the bar too high for his own purposes?
Because no, it's just, this is, you set the expectation and then people hold you to it.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be very interesting to follow this season, mainly because there is a playoff expectation on this team with the moves that they have made. And Dan's, we already did it. Like, I get what they've gone out and done.
That's kind of, hey, by the way, you know, we won the World Series a while back.
Yeah, a while back, being the, you never stop trying to win the World Series.
And the next thing you know, it's 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. In a blink. For some people, that World Series feels like yesterday. It's 9 years ago.
And if you're in the NFL, the next thing you know, it's 30 years.
Think about where you were 9 years ago. Like, that is a long-ass time ago.
Well, for me as a White Sox fan, I can literally say 20 years ago. Like,
right, but there's no expectations there.
But that's the point, though, is how long does that last you?
Go White Sox!
clearly there is a disconnect between Cubs ownership and the common Cubs fan. And what's kind of humorous about it is that there's always a disconnect between an ownership and its fans, unless you're in certain places and you're winning. I can name probably on one hand all the teams I feel like there is no disconnect between the ownership and the fans.
But I love that the standard has been set for this. You want this to be the discussion.
Yeah.
You want that to be the standard. You want your fans to ask you those questions because they think they are the Joneses, so to speak. And they should. That's the goal, is to set that standard.
Well, here's what we know about Cubs ownership. They are not the Joneses. They are the other family trying to keep up, and they're not doing
well. No, but they're not.
They're not doing very well.
The new Joneses are the Dodgers.
They just told you. Yeah, they just told you they can't keep up because the Dodgers have made really good business decisions years ago.
But he is right about, you do need to look at the drafting piece of this. You do need to look at your prospects.
Yeah. Stack the prospects so you can trade for guys and go for it every once in a while.
Part of the reason they're in this problem, and the reason it wasn't sustainable, is because of how they struggled developing certain talent on their roster. You know, they did have that history of not being able to develop pitching talent for a long time. You know, that is part of the issue here. That is how you become sustainable.
And to be honest, they didn't want to develop pitching talent for a while. That just wasn't the belief in the league before the game changed completely.
They just hit their way out of everything.
I mean, I don't know. Some of that was pretty timeless. Like, Cleveland was pretty timeless. Detroit's history of development. That's how you kept in the conversation.
But Theo was very open about when the John Lester contract was signed. They, especially due to injury, they did not want to invest in young arms. They wanted to go buy pitching. And they did when the time came, and then the game changed. And then it became simply about velocity and spin and pitch creation and the number of healthy elbows you can have before they all blow out. And everybody's throwing 100, and you just get as many of those guys as you can, which was the complete opposite of the way they had done business in Boston and here with the Cubs.
But I do agree with him in that you have to have a sustainable farm system to be able to compete and, frankly, sustain that success. You do. See the Astros.
To not have the dip.
Seven straight ALCSs, and you have the tradable prospects, and you're able to get that capital. If it's not monetary, it's prospects. Like, that's how you stay afloat, right? That's how you keep it going. He's right about that part. Like, that should be acknowledged. But you set the standard.
Now live up to it.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, middays 10 till 2.
It's been as clutch as the Dodgers have. And Turner in the air to center field. That ball's hit well. Martinez on the run. This is way back. And it is gone. It is a walk-off home run for Justin Turner.
Justin Turner is a Chicago Cub. He's had a hell of a career. What they have in the whatever remains of him at age 40 remains to be seen. And perhaps it's one of these situations where if handled properly, they can get the kind of production that he had last year. He had 460 at-bats last year, so I presume it'd be fewer than that. Maybe limit it to, 300 or so? See if he hit an OPS plus of 114 and an on-base percentage of 354. So that plays.
This is a team that needed depth, so it is a welcome piece for depth. And I like the balance of veteran with youth if you're going to go that direction at third base, right?
Well, he's not going to play third.
Or, yeah, he wouldn't play. I mean, he could play some, but he's likely going
to. Yeah, he has to.
I would assume that he's going to help Matt Shaw some at third base.
I would say he's your backup first baseman.
Can he be both?
Backup first, backup third? I don't want to overuse him.
He hasn't played a lot of third since like 2022,
yeah,
to be fair.
I don't want to overuse him at third at this point, but he certainly has been around winning. And as we've been told, it's also his understanding of score and situation and doing what is needed in a moment.
It's a solid veteran depth piece for a team that needed one.
I feel like that's a lot of money for that solid veteran depth piece, but I guess you get what you pay for, and is the hope here with the $6 million, because you look at their overall budget and their willingness to maybe make moves at the deadline, is this money that's being spent now on Justin Turner going to take away from their possibilities of them adding?
Don't know.
Yeah, that becomes the question, right?
Yeah.
Is that if they're going to willingly spend this much money, does that take away from something else?
Does this feel like a last gasp for them?
He was an all-star as recently as 2021, was also an all-star in 2017.
I think what you're seeing is the Cubs had a clear plan for what they wanted to do at certain positions, right? The plan was Bregman, if not Matt Shaw. I think we can all agree on that at this point, right?
Yes.
And then, if so, if you've got, youth and Shaw is an oblique that he's not concerned about, but either way, there are several positions where you could shuffle infield potentially or need to or something where you could say even depth at first base would be helpful, right? So to have somebody there who can help spell that with a veteran where you know that those at-bats are going to be meaningful in any situation, I don't hate the deal.
No, the veteran bat is important. The depth is important. That's something we know about how over the course of a season, guys are going to miss time more than likely. Everybody can't be the idea of what Dansby Swanson wants to be. I think that's a big takeaway that we've learned after watching him the last couple of seasons. When they signed the $177 million deal for 7 years with Swanson, he probably thought he was going to play 160 plus every year, but that's just not reality, especially as you get older. I think looking at this now, my biggest question is are they done offensively?
Yeah.
And it seems like they are.
I don't know, man. Like, as crazy as we just got in the last segment, Vlad is such a game changer.
No, I think if something like that becomes available, that's enough. But as far as just, this was a very pedestrian move, an important one. But I don't think there's any more wow factor left unless somebody like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. becomes available and you're willing to mortgage the farm, which, of course, they're willing to mortgage the farm because Jed Hoyer doesn't know whether or not he's going to have a job next season.
I really like this idea.
But, yeah, I think Jed is playing. He's in a corner right now. His back is to the wall. He's like, I got to make sure this team makes the playoffs. If the Cubs don't make the playoffs, Jed Hoyer is going to lose his job. Can you foresee Jed Hoyer keeping his job if the Cubs do not make the playoffs this year? I can't see it.
I don't know what he's been told. Budgetary constraints that he's had to deal with.
When you consider
the Yu Darvish trade, for example, are you making that in good conscience unless you were told you have to do something like it?
But I think the Yu Darvish deal was a different time. Fast forward, I don't think ownership thought that they'd be locked out of the playoffs for this long. And now, push has come to shove. They paid the manager. They got Kyle Tucker. They gave him the go-ahead in theory to sign Alex Bregman. Of course, they did not clear enough money to get that done. But I think there are expectations that have been levied upon him that weren't levied upon him in the past in terms of the really what's going to happen if you don't get where we think you should be. Ultimately, you got to win as a front office guy. And yes, ownership can be a hindrance to your ability to win, but a lot of people would say they should be good enough to win. A lot of people have said they should have been good enough to win last year.
Well, if he's going to hold the next president of baseball operations to the same standard, I wonder if, you know, value over replacement, if he says, look, this is the budget. You got to make the playoffs consistently on this budget. Jed Hoyer couldn't do it. You're going to be the guy to do it. It's an interesting job to take, then. It really is. If you know you're going to be taking it with those constraints. Because this is not the same ability that Theo Epstein had to operate. It's just not.
Here's what we do know, though, Dan. There's how many of these jobs that exist? And then how often do these jobs become available?
Oh, no, I'm not saying somebody...
They'll be lined up and people...
Someone will take it.
And people will be either foolish enough, arrogant enough, or confident enough, however you want to phrase it, to step into that. There would be no shortage of people who want the job. And so... I don't know if...
I'm not saying they couldn't fill it.
I don't know if ownership is in a mirror vanity style in their bedroom or if they're in a funhouse when they look at themselves. That's the problem here. If they're in the funhouse, they would realize we're looking at ourselves in a wrong manner. We've got to change what we're doing and what our expectations are.
I don't think they want to, but they did do that,
and this is the result.
Well... We will find out in 2025 if that is good enough.
Yeah, I think they won the World Series, and then they decided that they were going to become, in large part, a real estate and entertainment company.
And to the texter who says, well, Layla, they have a top 10 payroll. Jed is bad at the job. Top 10 is not the discussion anymore. It's top 5. The difference between 1, 2, 3, and 4, and 5, the top 5 versus the top 10, to me, are vast. You can't, the consistency out of the latter half of the top 10, you can't argue that.
So we're getting some reaction to Justin Turner and his signing by the Cubs. This is Ian Happ saying he's pumped to have him.
Been a fan of his for a long time, the way he plays the game. I think he's a natural hitter. His ability not only to drive the baseball, but like situationally hit, the swing, the way he thinks about hitting, like all that stuff, I think will be an asset for us.
We always make a big deal about guys coming from winners, you know, being a winner. To the major league player like yourself, is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think just the experience. I think he's had a pretty unique experience in the game, just his entire career path, and his ability to still do it. It's pretty impressive. So I think all of those things help a group.
It's kind of cool the pattern the front office has chosen here, just a lot of experience, a lot of pitchers, hitters. It really is a kind of a sign that what's in front of you, like what they want this season to be.
Yeah, and I think when you think about our player group and the ability to impact the player group, like somebody who's proven they can do it, hitting big spots, situational hitters, willing to take any role, like all of those things kind of help the total group. This is everybody's pulling in the same direction.
You've talked about the influence that kind of the older guys had on you when you were young, coming up in spring. Like, what can that do for Matt Shaw to have a guy like him here?
Yeah, I think anytime you can lean on guys who have done a lot in the game and experienced a ton of different things, it's a huge asset. You know, that not only does he have Nico and Dansby to talk to about coming up at a young age and what that takes, but a guy like Turner, who's reinvented himself, played forever, you know, had success at the highest level, like all of those experiences help form, you know, young players.
Are you surprised sometimes that a guy at 40 still has the desire and wanting to play? I mean, you know, most guys are burnt out by that time in baseball.
He's accomplished a ton. And he's accomplished everything you could want in a career. He's...
Well, maybe his family doesn't like him. I don't know.
That's a takeaway.
Sometimes guys just keep playing because they keep playing. If somebody's going to keep giving you money to play baseball, go ahead.
But also, he was a productive baseball player last year in the age 39 player. Season. So I understand.
Why adapted would you, well.
What's the old saying? The pitchers will let you know when you're done.
Yeah,
the pitching will let you know, and the pitching has not let him know that he's done playing baseball.
But again, I think on this team specifically, that needed depth. The fact that he plays multiple positions in an infield and has that veteran aspect, I think that's a good thing.
We have something to give away today. We are really your one source of all things happy and going to make you happy and feel good about yourself, because we have a pair of tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band perform live at the Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island on Friday, June 27th. So you got to be listening for your chance to win. And I learned before the show that one Layla Rahimi can play the fiddle solo from Ants Marching on her viola.
It's not that hard. I just, my strings are terrible.
Well,
like I could do it right now because I haven't tuned that instrument in forever. But
I don't know any of their songs by name, so I'm sure I know exactly what the solo is, but I don't
know.
Dude,
like the first album for me, and I'm lost after that.
I can't name a single Dave Matthews Band song.
What if I told you guys from age about 16 to age about 25 that was my favorite band?
I would believe
so.
You
have more than one album worth of songs.
Yeah, but I listened largely to his live stuff. That's where it's really at. Like, I don't know how many of his recorded albums I actually listened to, like maybe 3 or 4. I really just tracked down all the live stuff that I could.
So how many you're times going to the concert?
I wouldn't say no. I've only been once. I saw a two-day show he did in Noblesville when I was 20 summer.
I'm surprised this Dave Matthews Band is allowed back in town after what happened on the bridge.
I generally now, in my old age, I'm judging bands by how they seem to affect the fishing on the day that they're
what?
There. Yes. Whether it's Northerly Island or whether it's Lollapalooza, I've had more success on certain days when certain bands are sound checking and or playing.
As a guy who bases his whole worldview on statistics and probability, I just think this is a little ridiculous.
No, I'm telling you, Chapel Roan was smallmouth bass love Chapel Roan. And they also
is that a large enough sample size?
I don't know. I'm going to test it this year. We'll see. It's certainly
small
not a large
enough. Bass Love Chapel Road.
Oh my goodness!
Meanwhile,
I was like silence. There it is.
I was listening to some of her stuff yesterday. By the way, it is way more explicit than I really thought. Because if you're actually listening to what's being said, it's like. Ooh, that's not safe for work.
I was fortunate enough over the summer on Labor Day weekend to be present at Burnham Harbor for a sound check of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Oh, really? At Burnham Harbor? Well, that's cool.
That was a neato thing.
I think I went to that show.
Hey, next up, let's talk about our television viewing weekend, because I know it wasn't the same for everybody. There were some challenges on the old TV sports landscape and elsewhere. I'll say that. Some real challenges to you, the viewer. It's next.
Leaning on the second baseman, number two, Nico Hoerner.
Nico Hoerner, that's so fun.
We drove to the park together. We were listening to Nico. Oh, man, it's funny.
Nico Hoerner, how are you, man? Keep rocking it, mate.
He's got good hair.
He does.
He's jacked, too.
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Starting second baseman for your Chicago Cubs,
Nico Hoerner, as the people are chanting his name.
Oh, boy, that's what happens. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
Miss your voice.
Oh, that's nice.
See?
You were supposed to follow that up with,
miss your scent. Miss your musk. When this all gets sorted out, I think you and me should get an apartment together.
Nico Hoerner with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
How fun is that?
It's very fun to talk to Nico Hoerner, who joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Nico from Cubs Camp. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. How
are
we doing?
We are good, man. How you feeling? How's the flexor and the tendon and the flexor tendon? All of it.
Yeah, all of it. It's doing well. A good bit into my throwing program and such. Still got no dates or big fancy announcements or things like that, but moving along well and making good progress. I think best way to put it is like a couple months ago or like when I got surgery, like if you were to tell me I am where I am on February 18th, I'd be really happy with it. So I'm in a good spot.
Well, that's good news overall. We want you to get to go to Japan. I like picturing Nico in Japan. Have you been to Asia of any kind before?
No, I haven't. I mean, it's just as a fan of the game, right? It's just going to be such a great spectacle, a celebration of the sport. Obviously, for the Dodgers coming off of a championship and with their Japanese players and with ours, like, it's just going to be so cool to see those players received in their home country. And we get, like, glimpses of it here, like, with getting off the bus and a bunch of Japanese fans outside waiting around in some places you wouldn't expect sometimes, but I can't even imagine what it's like in the actually in Japan. So going to be so cool to see that.
Yeah, as a lover and an appreciator of culture and of baseball culture, you deserve to see that. If you don't get to go, what can we do? Can we send sushi? I mean, the desert is not a great spot for sushi historically out there in Arizona, but, you know, we'd like to do anything we can if you don't get to go.
Yeah, no, I think even the best sushi in Arizona would just feel like a bit of a slap in the face compared to what the team's experiencing there. So hopefully we don't get to that point, but I'll probably not be consuming sashimi while the team's in Japan if I don't go.
Yeah, hey, we get a fresh out of the lake here in Chicago, so we're all we're all good. Nico, I'm guessing that Justin Turner will be one of those guys that is on the plane en route to Asia. What did you think about that signing? The 40-year-old Justin Turner is a Cub.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Like, it's one that really, really fires me up. Just from a standpoint of, like, he's a player that I've really enjoyed watching hit for so long and just have so much respect for him in so many ways as a player, from just as his offensive profile. And obviously, it's been well documented, but how much he improved at the major league level and then the sustained success in an era of baseball when players so quickly are not giving opportunity after, you know, they're 31, 32, and for him to do it until he's 40 and just continuing to produce at such a high rate, it fits our lineup and our needs incredibly well. And I'm so excited to have him around and watch him do his daily work. It's going to be really, really fun.
What do you love that he does at the plate during the course of an at-bat?
Yeah, well, I think he was definitely lumped in with like a bunch of hitters in like a time when there was such an emphasis on getting the ball in the air and you know, launch angle and pull side homers and all that stuff that's just become, you know, common lingo now. I think he was kind of a poster child for that, whether he wanted to or not. But there's so much more to his game than that. Like, I feel like he's as good as anyone in baseball situationally. He's got a backside line drive whenever he wants it. He walks. He doesn't strike out at a high clip. Like, it's just a really, really well-rounded offensive player and someone who can kind of do anything you ask at the plate. And that's kind of, you know, that's the kind of offensive player I've always wanted to be and a lot of us strive for. And he's done it for a long, long time and big situations, big games, and it will be great to have him around.
When I think about the possible offensive improvements for this club, I think about more at-bats like that. Just, you know, and we don't have to talk about guys who went away, but like all the guys that have come here and some of the youngsters all seem capable of like really smart, thoughtful at bats, like full at bats, like you're talking about. And if you have enough of those, that can keep the line moving and keep rallies going, can it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the ability to win all sorts of different kinds of game, which of course is asked of teams at Wrigley, I think, more than most places, because you got to be able to win 12-10, win 2-1, all those in betweens. And I think when you have really well-rounded players like that, it gives you that opportunity. A guy who can hit the three-run homer, but also hit a, you know, not strike out and hit a sac fly in a tough situation, or all those things. And it just, I think, when you add a well-rounded lineup like that all together, it's makes it so that those, you know, the good stretches are longer and maybe the bad stretches are shorter.
Yeah, we have a pretty good idea of what we can expect from Turner at this point in his career. One of the guys, though, that I don't know what to expect out of is Matt Shaw, who in theory could very well be the starting third baseman on day one for this Chicago Cubs team. What should we know? What is your evaluation so far in getting to know Matt Shaw and what he might be capable of at the major league level?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime it's hard talking about teammates that you haven't really gone through it with.
Yeah.
Like, really, the course of a season, I think, is when you learn so much about guys' character and just what it's like playing with them in competition and all. But so I've only really been around him in the complex settings. But, you know, I really appreciate his confidence. I feel like he moves from a place of knowing himself really well and knowing his strengths, but also being able to self-assess and look at parts of the game that he can improve on. And he just seems really committed to being a well-rounded player and doing all parts of the game well. And, you know, he's stolen bases at a really high clip in the minor leagues. He's hit for power, has defensive versatility, and is looking really good at third base. So, yeah, just exciting to have another athlete that can do pretty much anything on the field. And just excited for him, you know, no matter what his opportunity is. I think he's going to be someone that seizes what's in front of him and continues to improve.
There's a lot of people who could move around this infield, you know, like, mm-hmm. like, and some of the minor, the big league guys trying to make the end of the bench, like Nicky Lopez and John Birdie and Bush yeah. has a history of moving around, like, and you do, like, once you're fully healthy, you think you'll move around a little bit and play some short in the mix?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have the luxury of a shortstop who plays, you know, literally almost every day and takes a lot of pride in that. So, you know, in a perfect world, I'm not playing a lot of shortstop because that means that Dansby is, you know, healthy in himself and playing well. And we obviously want that. But, yeah, obviously the ability to play shortstop is huge for me in my game, and look forward to getting back there.
Do you pay attention? I'm sure you've been asked questions similar to this, but do you pay attention to the predictions people are making? Because there's a lot of people who are pretty comfortable with you guys winning the division.
I'm not so much aware of, like, division predictions. I saw there was some, like, win projections for us that were higher than in past years, and, you know, I would have said that was pretty obvious or accurate given just roster construction and stuff. It seems like a more full team than we've had in past years going into the season. And but, no, not in comparison to the rest of the division, but mentality-wise, that should absolutely be the mentality. I mean, works backwards from winning a World Series, but starting with that is winning the division and dominating. And I think that's a, you know, the headspace we should be in, not so much like, can we make our way into the playoffs or creep into a wild card, like the situations we put ourselves in past years. Like, you know, the outlook should be dominating for sure.
Hot topic, Cubs offseason. Yeah, you think a more full team at this point than you have felt like last year or and maybe the year before too?
Yeah, I think you just look at the entire roster and You know, every team has room for improvement and players you can add or trades you can make, and that might well happen in the middle of the year this year. You know, you never know, but I just feel really confident in the group that we have, a combination of guys with who've been here and have had success with the Cubs, and then you bring high-end talent in and up from minor leagues, and I think that's when you kind of start having sweet spots of consistency that's been here before, and then sparks of some new guys around, and I'm just excited to see how that plays out.
Hey, Nico, last week we talked to this new White Sox outfielder named Mike Tauchman. I believe it's pronounced Tauchman. And yeah, he was praising you for something very important off the field.
We had a good group because, like, fantasy, our fantasy football league was we had a lot of guys that believed in their hearts that they knew ball. I think there's a big difference between knowing, like, how to do fantasy football or, like, DraftKings fantasy football or, like, doing that and, like, knowing ball.
Amen.
So, and hey, both are important. It's one thing to watch the games wanting the guy to do well for your fantasy team, and it's another thing to watch the games.
How about our guy Nico? I know he made the fantasy playoffs, and he was proud of that, but I mean, I think he was learning football from you guys, frankly, during the course of the year.
Uh-oh. The fact that Nico did have the first pick and took Christian McCaffrey and still made the playoffs is a big, big credit to Nico. He did a great job.
So, I mean, look at that. Look at the love from Mike Tauchman, your former teammate. It's really nice.
Yeah, he's big on the, you ask him a question and he'll kind of pause and put his hand up and then slowly break it down on his terms. And I could picture him talking right there through that difference of knowing ball and being able to put a fantasy team together. And it's well done.
That's hilarious. The first part of that, by the way, was him talking about Justin Steele and kind of saying, because I heard Justin Steele on the radio, on this radio station with Zach Zaidman talking football, and I could not have been more impressed with his knowledge. Of players, and it sounded like to me that this Tauchman fella was kind of saying that he's a fraud too. So I guess Tauchman's the only guy that has football prowess in that, or did have football prowess in that locker room.
Yeah, I mean, I think you get a certain amount of supposed knowledge in your head, and you just start confusing yourself. And I just see the points on the page. I'm not looking into it too much. I'm putting the best option in, letting it ride. So we're going from there.
Yeah, there we go. All right, well, we'll keep that rivalry going. It's good. It's good. Good layer to add to Cubs Sox is the fantasy football competition between you guys. Nico, thanks for the time, man. We're wishing you health and wishing you Asia. All right?
Yes.
That would be a good combo.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
All right, man. Thanks, Nico. See you soon.
And now we've got bad blood.
Yeah.
We did it.
I forgot to tell him I'll be out there this week. But I'll check
in Asia.
Yeah, I'll be in Asia.
He probably knows you're going to be there, Spiegs. He's probably looks like, oh yeah, Spiegelman, play-by-play guy. Of course he's going to be here.
Tell you what's coming up on Thursday, by the way, for the Cubs' first game, which is not here on the Score.
Oh, okay.
They are going to be using Mark Grody.
Aluminum bats.
No, but it's a great guess. They're going to be using something that is more modern than that and something that may be coming to MLB, not this year, but the next year.
Oh.
Or the year after.
Oh.
The automated ball strike system.
Oh.
Will be used on Thursday in the Cactus League opener against the Dodgers. That's got out in Glendale at Camelback Ranch.
That's cool.
Umpires are going to make the calls, but managers will have the ability to challenge two calls per game. And a successful challenge means the team retains that challenge. So that is the way. And we have heard that the technology in terms of the measuring of the strike zone is not quite there. But, you know, in terms of adjusting it for every player and every at bat, and if a guy crouches down or doesn't crouch down, all those kinds of things. And where are we talking about a box that's over the plate? Like, all these things are in play. But I do love that MLB players will get a chance to try this out on
Thursday.
It
feels like something that we have been talking about it probably for decades now, but like something that would never actually happen, like just something we talk about, and then here it comes. And I get it, it's not like official, but to actually see them start to flirt with it and test it out, that's kind of an amazing moment, really.
We'll see how long it takes to get that going.
To where they really implement it.
Yeah.
What do you think the goal is? Because they're obviously not going to do it this year. I would think that they would – probably be more serious in their test runs this year if they were going to do it next year. So maybe 3 to 5 years.
I think they're trying to get
sooner.
I think they're trying to get the feedback. Trying to get the feedback here.
Still feedback
from the big league players on how they think it's working, and from big league managers on how they think it's working. And we'll see. You know, we'll see how much of that is going to get used. You know, and how much of that is going to get used as we move forward. Top of the hour, we'll talk some big picture baseball stuff. As Tom Ricketts and the Cubs are the face of an MLB broken system these days. But when we come back, a couple little things to get to. A disaster from Saturday night that someone has found a way to turn into a positive. I dig that. And our colleague Bruce Levine reporting something about the future in Wrigleyville that we need to touch on as well. It's Spiegel and Holmes, Spiegs and Grody on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay. Here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on The Score.
Did you have a college basketball team growing up?
I kind of bounced around a little bit. DePaul. Yeah. Like my dad was a DePaul alumnus in the 80s.
Oh.
You know, they were damn good. Going to Rosemont Horizon for a big game with Notre Dame, and the place would be rocking.
Oh, yeah. That's the team that I grew up rooting for. I was a massive DePaul fan.
Tyrone Corbin.
Oh, yeah, man.
Kenny Patterson.
Dallas Comedies. You want to play that game, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's time to play the game.
Playing the game.
Rod Strickland.
TJ. Tony Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, Tony Jackson.
It's good to have fun with names.
Kenny Patterson. Rod Strickland.
Yeah. David Booth.
Mark Aguirre. Terry Cummings. Dave Corzine.
Tom Kleinschmidt.
Peter Patton.
Teddy Grubbs. I bet you can't match that.
Marty Embry. Remember Marty Embry?
Marty Embry.
There we go.
What does that do? Did that blow your mind? That just happened.
One of my favorite introduction names for some reason. Marty Embry. Big Marty Embry.
TJ. Tony Jackson.
Oh, yes.
What a beautiful play by Dar Tucker.
D-E-L-O-N-S.
Yeah. Or just a simple, we are DePaul. Yes, we are DePaul.
Can you do a Dave Corzine?
Hey, what's going on, Zach? What's going on, Zach?
Well, that's very nice. I'm humbled by that. That would happen, and I didn't have any clue that you guys were looking at doing that, but I'm very happy to hear it.
I mean, like, on the...
He does these impersonations. I swear, you would think it was the real people.
I didn't realize I could talk about these guys with you.
I think we became a team today. We became a team.
The official adventures of Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
I tell you what, Mark Grody, Dan Weider, if you guys don't stop naming demons, I'm going to come back there, tell you to shut up. Good for you boys, having some fun yesterday. That was Grody and Weedsy on the Spiegel and Holmes show yesterday. Today, it's Spiegs and Grody with Shane and Tanny. Welcome to your week. Welcome to your afternoon. If you worked yesterday, you are a hero. That is absolutely correct. And by that, I mean you, Mark Grody. You are a hero.
I am happy to spend the next 4 hours being a hero. Yes, I did work yesterday with Dan Weiderer as we co-host the Take the North, but we went rogue. We went full DePaul, classic DePaul Blue Demons games. That is one category. In life that I would probably win.
I got to say, the more you age and do radio, the more you sound like Les Grobstein, even when you're trying not to.
You know what I realized?
Have you noticed that?
Well,
like that right there, like, we went rogue.
I will tell you, Spiegs, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
I know, Stoney.
Not to mention the fact that I was naming 70s and 80s basketball players.
That's right.
That's also Skip Dillard and Clyde Bradshaw. You don't know anything about...
You weren't down there, I was.
I was there. You don't know anything about Teddy Grubbs. You were too young to have known any of that.
If you had half of a croissant in your pocket that you got it in Chapel Hill in 1978, then you really are getting all the
way
there.
Okay, I realize this because I know Lawrence Holmes, the regular co-host of this show.
Who?
Yeah, often, we know him too.
You guys know him. Yeah, so I thought I'd put his name out there.
Who is Marshall Harris?
We refer to him as Lawrence the host as opposed to Lawrence the band or Lawrence the Avenue.
I don't know why you guys like refuse to allow me to give Lawrence credit for something. Look, Lawrence Holmes, I thought worth mentioning that he's the co-host of the show, but apparently not. He likes to talk about what trees people come from, radio trees. What I have decided,
Are you on the Grobstein tree?
I have accepted that, I think, because I really never had a tree. I've been treeless at this radio station in terms of mentors because I spent a lot of time down the hall.
He walked down the hall.
That's right. That's right. So
yeah, he did.
I think I come from the grobber tree, and the only person that
I hear a lot of excuses coming out of Mark right now why he can't have his own tree. You've been here for long enough, okay? Lead from the front.
No, but he's talking about the lineage and where he's from. It's interesting, Groats. I know I told you this. I think at the time when you were filling in on the Score and occasionally BBM, there was one time I happened to be driving in Southern Illinois on a vacation, and I heard you on the radio down there in Springfield doing news talk on the middays, and I'm like, I know that guy.
Uh-huh.
So you were on that Springfield tree, whoever you learned from down there.
Right, former Congressman Jack Davis was his name, actually, a congressman.
Mark, you know damn well what tree you're on.
What tree am I on?
Dave Miska tree.
Oh, yeah, the Miska tree! Yeah, the Miska tree, maybe. I actually, like, if we're really doing trees, what am I, like the George Offman tree? Because
I
used to do updates then reporting.
Take that. You and Bartosz are on the Offman tree.
Ooh, that's... Oh, man.
Just run with that.
I don't know if Bartosz would appreciate that or not. I don't know. I'm all for it.
You don't get to choose what tree you're on, pal.
You don't
get to choose your own tree.
That's a good point.
That's not how it works.
So, yeah, Grobber is my... he is my influence.
Here's what's going on in the show today. We're going to talk to Jason Leisure a little bit later on, the Chicago Sun-Times, a Bears reporter and writer. Nico Horner is moved to a little bit later in the show. About 4:25, we'll talk to Nico after the Cubs get done with their business out there in Mesa. We'll touch on Tom Ricketts and the Cubs as the face of MLB's broken system. We'll do that in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll do some crosstalk with Anthony Herron at about 5:40 later on today. At some point, we'll discuss Matas Buzelis and that horrific showing in the dunk contest, but not right now. You can dial it up and get involved at 312-644-6767. That's how you can reach us via text or by phone. And a reminder that breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. There is a new Cub. The 40-man roster needs someone removed because Justin Turner, at age 40, the former Dodger, the former Red Sox player. God, he was a lot of different places along the way. A 16-year MLB-er who was, I think, was a Mariner as well briefly last year between the Blue Jays and the Mariners. He's been all over the place. A very capable right-handed hitter. Can hit for contact, hit for a little power. He's obviously in decline. He's a man. He's 40.
That's right.
Can't be trusted to play third base anymore. Can play a little first base, but that is a righty veteran bat who wanted to be here. It completes sort of a big market bingo for Justin Turner that he had apparently talked about a little. Like, you know where I haven't been is Chicago. And now he can say that he has. And that is obviously Alex Bregman consolation. $6 million for 1 year. And it means that Matt Shaw has some backup. Again, though, Turner probably not a guy who's going to play much third base at all during the course of the year, maybe in a pinch, but that'll give you a righty bat that you can slot into the lineup as often as you like.
Well, it's perfect because obviously he is, at this age, yes, he is a perfect bench guy, but those two players, specifically third base and first base, we have no idea what Matt Shaw is going to do. He may come up and get sent right back down, Matt Shaw, if he is the starting third baseman on opening day. We have no idea how he is going to handle major league pitching, so Turner is safety for that. Mm-hmm. And then even, and I'm pretty confident in Michael Bush. Like, I think Michael Bush is legit. I'm not saying that he's going to be a star or anything like that, but you have to take that into account as well, that he's going into his second year and you don't know exactly what you're going to get out of Michael Bush. So just sort of a fail-safe. You don't want Michael Turner playing 150 games at first base, but just be ready. Be ready at those two positions, and Turner can take care of both.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, like, the handing of the job to Michael Bush based on the first half stats and all of that is understandable, but he could have kept Cody Bellinger, man. He could have kept Cody Bellinger. But I think they were trying to get Bregman, and they could not finish that deal. We'll have more on that and everything. And there's a topic that we need to throw at you, the Cub fan, in just a few minutes. But first, let's hear some of the Cubs players talk about the addition of Justin Turner. First, here's Dansby Swanson, the shortstop, the veteran stalwart of the infield, talking about adding a bat like Justin Turner.
I mean, obviously, we've played against each other for a while. The only, like I said, the only off the field encounter I've had with him was at a Bueller's wedding a few years ago. But I mean, yeah, he's been a really good player for a long time, and I think that he's someone that we can really learn a lot from, just his experience, and he's just such a pro at what he does. That'll, I think, really impact this group, especially from a position player standpoint and an offensive standpoint, and he's somebody that you definitely want to have on your team.
Let's see someone young like Matt Shaw. You know, he's kind of been through the ringer. How does that help him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's obviously a good sounding board for anything. Like I said, he's experienced. He's been successful. He's kind of like not been successful and then been successful, like worked his way from being a good player to being a great player. So I think that that is always something that can never be, you know, overstated, I guess. Just the importance that it takes for someone that can change the trajectory of their career, really, and to be able to do it for a long time and to be able to be a part of a winning, you know, culture and group for a long time. All that stuff is valuable and important, and obviously, you know, it's good for any of us. It's not just good for Matt. It's good for all of us just because that experience and the ability to kind of like explain it and coach it, if you will, because he taught himself how to do it, I think it's going to be even more beneficial for a lot of guys than I think we even realize at this moment. So
how much respect do you have for a guy at age 40 still has the burning desire to play and win and be part of that culture?
I think, I mean, you kind of answered it by asking it. Somebody that's obviously at that age and you know, still willing to be out here and want to pursue greatness. It tells you all you need to know about him. It tells you what he thinks about this group as well. Just, you know, wanting to be here. You know, I don't think he's wanting to waste years away. So wanting to be here and be a part of this group and be a part of Chicago Cubs is going to be awesome.
Justin Turner can still hit. In 2023, as a Red Sox, you're looking at 23 homers, 96 RBI, and an OPS of 800. You know, it kind of reminds me of J.D. Martinez in terms of one of these guys who can flat out hit, who is hanging around into age 39, into age 40 now. I know it's not exciting, and it's not Bregman, and it's also not, you know, trading for another big piece. And but it is a guy who gives you very good, legitimate at-bats and can absolutely still hit and will extend this lineup on days that he's in there. I'm totally cool with this signing on a one-year deal.
He is a great guy to have on your team, assuming you don't have to depend on him too much. Like, he seems like the perfect presence to have from it. It sounds like a good locker room guy. It sounds like a guy who could play two important positions briefly. Why that look?
Because Seiya Suzuki should be your everyday DH, and now Turner is going to be a guy who should be your everyday DH.
And
maybe he will end up in a platoon with Bush of sorts. And the fact that Bush can play some third and some second, I'm very interested to see how the defensive innings are allocated here in the spring for everybody involved, because I think there's still some moving parts in terms of defensive possibilities.
God, yeah,
here.
Let's lock in that down, because the idea is, and they've had the honest conversations now, right, that Seiya Suzuki should probably be very limited in his outfield time. You're not messing with Kyle Tucker, you're not messing with PCA, and you're certainly not messing with the Gold Glover in left field and Ian Happ.
Let's hear from Ian Happ about the Justin Turner signing, in fact, earlier.
Is it official? Do we have confirmation? Should I comment on it if it's not official? If it is, I'm really excited. I'm pumped. Been a fan of his for a long time, the way he plays the game. I think he's a natural hitter. His ability not only to drive the baseball, but like situationally hit, the swing, the way he thinks about hitting, like all that stuff, I think will be an asset for us.
We always make a big deal about guys coming from winners, you know, being a winner. To the major league player like yourself, is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think just the experience. I think he's had a pretty unique experience in the game, just his entire career path, and his ability to still do it. It's pretty impressive. So I think all of those things help a group. When you think about our player group and the ability to impact the player group, like somebody who's proven they can do it, hitting big spots, situational. He is willing to take any role. Like, all of those things kind of help the total group. This is everybody's pulling in the same direction.
Are you surprised sometimes that a guy at 40 still has the desire and wanting to play? I mean, you know, most guys are burnt out by that time in baseball.
He's accomplished a ton. And he's accomplished everything you could want in a career. He's won. He's been an all-star. He's done it all. So the fact that he wants to come back and keep going is really awesome. You know, he loves baseball. He wants to be a part of it. It's really cool.
Can you imagine playing 40?
Wouldn't that be special?
That's a funny answer. Can you imagine playing at 40? Somewhere there's tape of Mick Jagger saying, if you think we're still going to be playing music at age 40, yeah, you've got another thing coming. Right. We used to use that on Sound Opinions.
That's perfect.
It actually exists from Mick in his late 20s.
That's amazing. Know? Still going. Yeah, yeah, right. Bartolo Colon, I believe, had a similar quote to
as
well. Yeah.
I mean, look, Justin Turner has had a crazy interesting run in terms of once he got to the Dodgers at age 29, that's when things took off. Like, he was thought to be a big-time Mets prospect who didn't really do anything. They gave up on him, and then he bloomed in L.A. And what Hap says there at the beginning is absolutely correct. We're going to appreciate the fact that he can drive the ball. He's one of those guys who can drive the ball until there's two strikes, and then situationally with two strikes, he can shorten up and get you a big base hit when needed, or hit the ball the other way on the ground when needed. And the more guys you have who can do that, the better off you are, especially in the game these days.
Yeah, but I'm with you too, man. I mean, like, if he is your get the bulk of the game's DH, I don't know if that's putting him in the best position to succeed at 40, because at some point in time, that will catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so here you are, and the big news today the big news today is that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has told the Blue Jays that he's not going to sign, and the Blue Jays are faced with the prospect of maybe dealing Vlad Jr., which is something that has been bandied about for more than a year. I did a segment in the middle of the season last year about, you know, trading for Vlad Jr. and what the move could be this offseason. So here we are, Cubs as constructed right now, having added Justin Turner and seeing what that is and all the positional things that are floating here. I don't think they should trade for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as of right now today. I do not think that they should. You have given up a ton to get Kyle Tucker in terms of Cam Smith, and you've got 1 year with him, and you've got 1 year to try and convince him to sign here, and to give up a ton more for a one-year rental of Vlad Jr., to give up a bunch more kids when you don't really have a positional fit and mix right now is an awkward thing. I think what you need is an ace pitcher. I would much rather trade. If I'm going to trade more pieces for a one-year rental, I would much rather try and swing a deal for Dylan Cease or Michael King, one of the pitchers from San Diego. I would much rather make that kind of deal than I would for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now, because Vlad is also a guy who I don't want to invest in his aging. I do not want to invest in that body type and that aging. If I'm going to sign somebody, I'll sign Kyle Tucker. I'm all here for signing Kyle Tucker to a long-term deal, not Vlad Jr. So giving it all up for another rental when you're almost assuredly not going to sign him, to me, is not a good idea right now.
See, I would do it just because we all now know more, it feels like, about the way the Cubs are doing business right now. And I learned some from you, Matt Spiegel, in terms of the economics and the realism of the Cubs and the budget that does exist for Jed Hoyer. And so, to me, that means that in a season like this, where you can start to put you don't know if you're going to have Kyle Tucker long term at this point. If you are truly thinking about winning this year, in the we know the division is winnable. What is not necessarily winnable is games in the playoffs right now. If you are to add somebody like Vladimir Guerrero, then we start to talk about it. So in a go for it capacity, in a 1 year go for it capacity, I don't see why you wouldn't do it at this point.
So let's talk about it with you guys at 312-644-6767. I have loved the idea in the past, but now that you are here, where you are with Kyle Tucker as a 1 year rental, and now you've just added Justin Turner, I'm a no on trading for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and giving up everything you'd have to give up right now to do so. I'm a no. Speaks is a no. Grody's a yes. And we want to hear from you guys at 312-644-6767. I know it's been bandied about a little bit today, and I understand, and it's super enticing, and the idea is exciting. I get it, but I wouldn't give up everything you need to get for a one-year rental because I don't want to sign that guy long-term at this point, especially considering that I do want to sign Kyle Tucker long-term.
I agree with that. I mean, to me, it says to me that you don't think that that would be enough for the Cubs to win anything this year. That if they added Vladimir Guerrero, that ain't enough. You're not seeing playoff wins with this Cubs team.
Let's talk about it. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. It's Spiegel and Holmes. Do you want to trade for Vlad Jr. or not? Spiegs and Grody here on The Score.
Bruce, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, excitement here in Mesa, Arizona as Justin Turner getting ready to join the Chicago Cubs. Commissioner in town yesterday talking to everybody. White Sox have their little news. Not much, but where do you want to begin today?
Let's start with Turner. What do you see his role as, and what do you see his contribution being? Is he a better kind of intangible guy than actual physical player at this point?
Yeah, that's a terrific question because we don't know that. I think the intangibles we've talked about at length, even yesterday before he signed. The fact that he brings the idea of a playoff experienced guy, a guy that never gets rattled, can come up late in the game and win it with a pinch hit, maybe go in and DH against tough left-handers, 25, 30 times during the year. Be there for that big pinch hit at the end of a ball game where Craig Counsell last year had to use Patrick Wisdom. He now has the gravitas and the player that's been there and done it in Justin Turner. So for $6 million, it's a lot of money for a backup player, but it shows that the Cubs are serious about having the extra men they need at the end of a ball game.
So, Bruce, Rob Manfred addressed the possibility of Wrigley Field hosting an All-Star game in 2027. I know this has been something you have been pushing for a very long time. What did Rob Manfred say that made you feel better or worse about the situation, and how, if it was at all, different from what we heard from Crane Kenny back at the Cubs convention?
Well, I think the fact that Rob Manfred addressed it and said the Cubs are doing what they need to do. So I guess people will say, well, what do they need to do? Number one foremost is security around the ballpark, okay? The security of having barriers. The Cubs have practiced that with part-time barriers throughout the last two seasons around the ballpark when the game begins. Number two, maybe it's 1A, and that is the mayor being on board for a big event in Chicago. Is this something that he wants, that they want, that they'll work together? I think number three is the logistics of rerouting Clark Street and Addison Street buses, two mainstream lines for Chicago streets. And where do these buses go when they're being rerouted during the All-Star week? It's not just the All-Star game. It's Home Run Derby. It's an entire week of festivities. So how does that work for Chicago and the working people of the city? Those are the things that they're trying to tighten up right now before they get the game.
How close to that is, how close to fruition would that be? If they can get that done, is it a lock that they'll get the game? Is MLB looking at this and saying, yeah, All-Star game in Chicago makes sense?
Yeah, they want him there, and they want him there in 2027. That's the next opening for Major League Baseball. And I think, if they can get some things tied up, I think Major League Baseball will announce that the Cubs are getting that game in 2027. I know the Cubs are keeping their fingers crossed. They want it, obviously. They haven't had it here in 37 years. There's 7 or 8 teams that have had 2 All-Star games already in their cities since – the Cubs have had one in 1990. Cubs have only had three in history, you know, going back to 47, 62, and 90. So it's way above time, you know, 36 years.
Mm. It does seem odd, though, that the Cubs did have a World Series in 2016, and they don't have the security capability to host an All-Star game. I know that may be getting too far in the weeds on this, but it just seems to be a consistent obstacle that I think, I wonder, had they already cleared. The World Series went off without a hitch, Bruce. That's got to be convincing to someone.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? There's probably an All-Star game missing up until 1988 when they first got lights. Because when they started to make this game under the lights back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, that changed everything. And Wrigley didn't have the ability to have that night game. So they probably missed one along the way. But again, it's more of a logistics thing. And security now compared to 1990 and the real threat of, you know, somebody, you know, a terrorist or a group, something like that, you know, doing something to a ballpark. It's so much more real now than we were facing, you know, 35 years ago.
So, Bruce, we know the opening game in Japan, the first game of the season, technically, even though they're going back to training camp after the first two games, is starting Shota a reward for his season? Is it a nod to the reality of him and his homeland? Or what I'm asking is Justin Steele at all injured or, you know, damaged or, you know, peeved that he doesn't get to do it again? You thought he put together a nice run of starts.
As the Cub officials said off the record yesterday, it was a no-brainer. Yeah. Okay, I mean, here you have one of the surprise. Imanaga was one of the best pitchers in baseball, not the best Cub pitcher, the best pitchers in baseball. He was ignored as a Rookie of the Year candidate. Obviously, Skeens was going to win that, but you know, when your team wins 22 out of 28 games that you start, and you are as impressive as he is, you know, there was probably four games where he was bad and he got beat around. The rest, he was terrific. So I don't think there's, even if he wasn't Japanese and they didn't have a Japanese player, he would be starting. That's how good he was last year. And this one is, you know, Yamamoto against him, Dodgers, and the, you know, just the coming of age for Japanese players in Major League Baseball. Not just coming here, but being dominant players, some of the best players in the history of the game playing right now.
Bruce, how would you advise us to discuss, as we already have, the Vlad Guerrero Jr. news out of Toronto? He's entering the final year of his deal. The Blue Jays can't sign him. They basically have, he's now a rental player. If you're the Cubs, do you inquire?
You do, but you can't sign him and Turner, can you?
No, but that's not the question. How badly do you want to win this year?
Well, they want to win badly. I mean, it's a good question from that perspective. There's no doubt. I mean, he has a slug, and you know, I think you could fit him in somehow in your salary cap. But I don't know. Are you going to give up three players for the 1 year of him? How much of your farm system are you willing to give up, David? You answer that question.
One everyday player, probably Bush, Horner, or Suzuki, and two prospects.
Okay, for one shot.
For one shot. If not now, when?
And a year from now, you won't be saying to me, boy, that was a really bad trade for
Guerrero. I might, Bruce, but you know what? You only live once. YOLO.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, look. By all,
well, his look was all, priceless.
The perspective.
I think it was the YOLO. That was what got me.
The perspective is right. That's what they're doing, David. You're just responding to how they're going after Tucker, how they're going after, you know, bullpen help one time, 1 year and out. It's a trend around baseball a little bit. I mean, you don't think the New York Yankees are going to pay him $50 million a year times 10 after 1 year of Goldschmidt playing first base
no
for
brainer.
The Yankees?
Yep, no
yeah,
brainer.
Yeah, I mean there'll be competition, but you know, again, I like the trade for 1 year. I don't like giving up a huge amount of inventory for you know, a player that's pretty good in Bush. I mean, nobody really seems to like what he did last year or can project him that, you know, his improvement's going to be linear. It's hard to do that, but he was a pretty impressive player for a rookie year.
Great stuff, Bruce. Thank you, buddy. Always fun.
Thanks, Bruce.
Guys, have a great day.
You too.
That is our guy, Bruce Lefine. We're going to get to Chris Chelios. We got to talk to Chelly. We're going to have him break down this game for us. Very curious to see how Chris feels about a chance for the U.S.
He's
to
been
win
on the
tournament.
Ice representing his country in the biggest of moments. He can relate to that intensity that we're going to see on the ice Thursday night.
And does he believe that there will be some fisticuffs in this one starting early?
My sense is Chelly probably loved that.
Yeah, I bet he did.
I bet he did.
He's old time, old school.